Okay, welcome back to InTune Radio, Shropshire's Business with Beats. My name is Shane Stark, and I have the pleasure of welcoming Leslie Obey from the Help Appeal. Leslie, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great, Shane. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's brilliant. Well, you know what? I have to admit, I didn't quite understand the name Help Appeal until I looked at your website, and now I understand that help is a, what do they call it, an anagram for helicopter emergency landing pads. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about the help? You know, I've looked at the website, so I know a little bit. I know it's the County Air Ambulance Trust is part of that. And it's the only charity, is this right? It's the only charity in the country that is funding helipads nationally.
Yeah, I am fiercely proud that we're the only charity of its kind that give non-refundable donations to trauma hospitals and key A&E hospitals in the UK. And we've been a charity for the Help Appeal since 2009.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. You know, foolishly, and I think a lot of people would probably think this way, I always assumed that helipads were part of hospitals. And I don't know why I thought that, probably too many television shows where it shows the helicopters coming in and those sorts of things. But when did that become, I don't know, the awareness of helipads and what they can do in hospitals? Because some of them, they were landing in fields near the hospital. Is that right?
Yeah, well, there is a story about one of the first helipads that we opened, and it was in Shropshire, and it was Oswestry Hospital, and it's a back specialist hospital. And years ago, what used to happen if people had fallen off a horse or fell off a ladder, broken a bone in the back, or more serious injuries, the air ambulance used to land in a park and a field which was near to the hospital, but it was across a field. So they would take the patient out of the air ambulance and bump them across a bumpy field until, obviously, we went in there in 2009 and we built a tarmac-covered walkway that took you directly into the hospital. Because, obviously, without anywhere smooth and you've got a back injury, it can be fatal, it can be life-changing, you might not be able to walk again. So that we saw the importance of it, you know, back then.
Right. It's amazing. I said I was surprised. I just assumed that that's how it would work. So it was, you know, very enlightening reading your website and how it has worked historically. And the upgrade. So you mentioned 2009 as the start of the Help Appeal. Now I'm going to rattle off some numbers here. So I hope I've got these right. But so far the charity has raised and donated 30 million pounds.
Exactly.
And there's plans for another 51 million.
Yeah, it's big numbers, but it's a big challenge, but one that we inspire to fulfill.
Okay. These helipads or these upgrades, you know, for some of the helipads that are already existing as well. Now, these are only for major trauma centers. Is that correct?
Yeah, because if you needed an air ambulance in critical circumstances for whatever accident or that you might find yourself in, the quickest way to get to hospital is by air ambulance. Well, that is a slick operation and they're a fabulous, fabulous thing and everybody needs an air ambulance. But more importantly, you need to land at a hospital. You need to be adjacent to the A&E department. If it's a rooftop, you need a lift down to be in the A&E department, because the minute you have your accident or incident, you need to get to hospital within the golden hour, where, you know, your life could be changed, could be saved, and it's a 50-50 chance that your life could be saved with the help of the air ambulance service and getting you to hospital, land on a helipad and get the treatment that you need straight away.
Okay, so this golden hour, I've heard that mentioned before and from some other charities, but how many air ambulance charities, because these aren't government funded, right? All the air ambulance all the air ambulance provisions are charity funded?
They're all charities in their own right, the same as the Help Appeal. So there's no government funding for them. And there's probably, I'd say, a dozen or more in the UK. They've all got, obviously, borders. Some have got three, some have got one. And they all cover the different borders. So we're covered where, you know, we could be here in the Midlands, we could be in Cornwall, and they all work together in a partnership to give you the best service.
So going back to the golden hour, can you explain that a little bit? Because again, I've heard it a few times, but I'm still not entirely sure what it means. I understand the importance.
The golden hour is, you know, from the onset of an accident or a serious, serious injury, it takes time for the air ambulance to get to you, wherever you might be in the country. You could be in a field, you could be on a golf course, and somewhere not necessarily where a land ambulance could get to you. Plus, they've got the added, traffic. So air ambulances are the most sufficient way for you to get to hospital. So the minute that accident starts to happen or has happened, the clock starts ticking and you've got a certain amount of time to get you to see that surgeon, that doctor, that trauma team to get you the life-saving service that you'd need.
Okay. And the ambulance, I guess when, depending on the surgery, the injury and the specialist that's required, do the hospitals, are there certain hospitals where the ambulances will take people if it's a head injury or a spinal injury, or do they go to different hospitals?
It's exactly that. So it could be two people that have a car accident and they've got different injuries. They wouldn't necessarily go to the same hospital. They'll go to the hospital that specialise in head injuries, back injuries, whatever it might be, you know, and that's you put in place those measures. So when the paramedics arrive, they'll assess your injuries and they'll decide where you need to go. And, you know, if you were to go into a land ambulance, the journey could take 45 minutes, an hour, whereas from leaving their airbase to get into you could take 6 minutes and another 6 minutes to hospital. So that's super, super fast, efficient way to get to hospital. And they're all medically, as much as a doctor, you know, they're absolutely brilliant and they see trauma at first hand.
Oh, it's amazing. And another number, and clearly I'm a numbers guy today. 20,000? Is it 20,000 lives have been, part of the air ambulance rescue? Is 20,000 individuals? Is that right?
That's right. It's like, there's been 20,000 landings on our helipads as a whole, and that's potentially 20,000 lives that are saved.
That's incredible. That's absolutely amazing. I tip my hat to you. I applaud the effort, you know, and what you're doing. Like I said, still surprised that it's just not part of the hospital offering, that it's a charity that has to do all of this. But there's some additional technology that you guys have pioneered as well. Now, bear with me as I try and explain it, because I won't know it as well as you. But I think it's called the DIFS system, which is the DEC integrated firefighting system as well. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, the DIFS system is installed on our helipads. The DIFF system, if the air ambulance were to have an accident, to set on fire, they would immediately put out the fire and stop any further stop any other, it wouldn't impact any more on the hospital. Whereas if without a diff system, the NHS rely on the fire service. So every landing at the hospital, they have to have a fire service on standby in case that happens. And it costs the NHS £250,000 per year to have that service available. And so we're saving the NHS money by having our diff systems in place.
That's amazing. £250,000 a year?
Yeah.
Per hospital?
Per hospital.
Oh my gosh, that's a huge amount of savings.
It is. So it's you know, it might never happen, but, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry, isn't it?
Well, and again, it's, you know, with that many people in a hospital, you know, obviously fire is a hazard that nobody wants. So to have something as responsive as the diff system, plus it saves the hospital 200, I mean, that's incredible.
Exactly. And normally a rooftop helipad, they build them in mind to save space. But sometimes they can be on top of a car park. So they're actually not losing any revenue from any parking that the hospital requires.
Right. You guys, honestly, this is so inspiring. And Leslie, I know you got involved through the Help Appeal for very personal reasons. Would you like to share your story with us about yourself and your son, Thomas?
Yes. Back in 2000, I was at home in Burntwood. It was my day off work. It was a Monday and it was during the Easter holidays. And we'd been out and Thomas wanted to go out and play with his friend from down the road. And I was just in the house doing jobs, as you do. And that day, I can't describe to you, Shane, I had a feeling of dread. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I had the dread for the whole day. And it was probably about half an hour later, and I saw this little boy running towards the house. And I ran downstairs and went outside, and he said, "Thomas has had an accident." Well, I've got no shoes on, and I ran to the end of the road, and I kind of knew it was serious. And Thomas was lying in the road, and there was people standing by, cars, people on phones. And I just ran to Tom, and somebody had put a blanket over him, and I just lay with him and chatted with him, and we waited for the ambulance to get there. And somebody had called the land ambulance, which arrived, and they had radioed through and said, "We need an air ambulance. It's a child. It's of, you know, most importance." So the air ambulance came, and it must have been 10 minutes later, but it felt like an hour. So anyway, they got there and they stabilised Tom, and they said, "Right, we're going to go to Birmingham Children's Hospital, and you can actually come with him," because I didn't realise if that happened to a parent, only the child or the patient would go to hospital, and the family or the loved ones would follow in a car. So anyway, there was a seat available to me. So they got Tom on the stretcher into the back of the air ambulance, and where I live in Burntwood, to go in a land ambulance would take 45 minutes, and it got us to Birmingham Children's Hospital within 6. They radioed through to the hospital, so we had a team of doctors waiting for us the other end. And what happened at the children's hospital, there's no helipad. We landed outside Steelhouse Lane police station to a crowd of people. Well, when you're a mom and you're in shock, you're in a life-threatening situation, you don't want people to look at you or look at your son. and I was more traumatized. So we went to the A&E department, and there was a team of doctors waiting, the best in the children's doctors department, and they continued to work on Thomas. And I was by his bedside holding his hand, and I wasn't in the way. It wasn't like you see on the TV. And anyway, after 25 minutes, there was a doctor who asked each doctor or nurse in turn if there was anything more that can be done. And I didn't want the last person to answer because they all said no. And the doctor said, "Mommy, I'm sorry, Thomas is gone." And so had I, to a big degree, and believe what had happened. And I didn't think this was a light bulb moment, but looking back, it was, because the paramedic that was in the air ambulance that took us to hospital didn't leave my side. And he'd worked on Thomas the whole of the journey, and he was talking to me the whole time, reassuring me what was happening next, what was going to happen when we got there. He was telling me all the time. And he put his arms around me and said, "I'm so sorry. I tried my best to help Tom." And that moment, I thought, that poor man is not going to go home tonight and watch the football and have a beer and think, what a day. It would affect you. It would affect anybody. And my life crumbled for months and months and months, until I had this thought about the hospital, the paramedics, and I thought, my Thomas is worth more than this. So I started to do fundraising. I did a walk, football matches with the school, and everybody rallied round, friends, family, excuse me. And from the March till the August, we raised £20,000. So I phoned up the charity and said I wanted to do a donation. And they were astonished and proud and grateful. And I met with the director, who said, "Thomas hasn't died in vain, you know. What are you going to do with the rest of your life?" And I said, "Well, I can't go back to a normal life, and I want to do something in Thomas's name, so I think you ought to give me a job." And he was smiling, and he said, "Let's talk about this in the future. If you're serious, we can definitely." And obviously, it wasn't long afterwards, I had another meeting, and he said, "Would I be the face of the help appeal?" Which I was back then. And since that day, with the help of friends, family, business colleagues, networking groups, you name it, we've raised well over £1 million, and we've helped to save so many lives, all in the name of Thomas Knight, my little beautiful boy.
Oh, Leslie, I think it goes without saying that your story is devastating and every parent's nightmare. But your bravery and strength to help others, I don't know where you find it, to be honest with you. You're powerful beyond my understanding. And I tip my hat to you. What you're doing is saving lives and making a difference. And, you know, you had a calling through unfortunate circumstances. So thank you for what you're doing, the money you're raising, and the lives that you're saving. Thank you for that. Again, it just, you know, I'm still amazed, because, you know, like, probably like, you know, every other Joe on the street, you just don't think about these things. You just assume that they're there. And I applaud the NHS. I applaud the doctors. I applaud everyone involved. But I would have been dumbfounded you know, if somebody would ask me that major trauma centers didn't have helipads, that they weren't accessible to air ambulances, they didn't have, you know, that understanding, especially considering the golden hour is such a well understood and talked about, you know, I guess, you know, subject matter. And even to that point, and I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, but because I used to live in Manchester, and yes. I went through your website and I looked at all the projects. Manchester, for as large a population as that is, and as big a hospital as it is, I couldn't believe that the helipad was only installed last year, 2021.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, some of these projects take a long time to go through the red tape of, you know, infrastructure, and, you know, some are quicker than others, but we've got the ethos at the charity. The sooner we get in, sooner it's built, we're saving lives from the get-go. So that's very important to us. We give them money up front and we do the fundraising after. We don't want to be saving our money. We want to use the charity funds in the most positive way.
Right. I, you know what? Say that again. So you use the funds that you've already raised, you give them the money up front, and then you raise the money afterwards to replenish what you've just dispersed.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
Because we're a life-saving charity. We want lives to be saved, you know, for immediate effect. So as soon as they have the surveyors go in or the construction people, we want to get it off the ground, so to speak, as soon as possible.
Unbelievable. For everyone listening, if you haven't already, throughout this interview, go online, search the Help Appeal, read the true life stories that are on there. They're inspiring, what these folks are doing, giving their time and the impact that they're making on, again, something that we all assume is there for us. But, you know, much like your story, Leslie, we'd hate to find out that it wasn't available in our time and need. So thank you very much. So how do people get involved? How could I help? I mean, I've seen the website, so I know what you're about to say. So I'm being a bit cheeky with that. But how can the average Joe in the community get involved to raise funds for the Help Appeal?
Right. Well, we do a number of things, so people can join our lottery. We do a lottery every week. At the moment, we're promoting our Christmas raffle. Well, the Christmas raffle only costs £1 per ticket. And you could actually win. First prize is £2,500. Second prize is £500. And then we've got 50 runners-up prizes of £25. And you can have 10 tickets, 20, however many you want. And it all goes straight to the charity. We also do payroll giving. We've got a wills company that if you take a will out with our Wilson Legal Service, they donate £30 per will that comes to the charity. So our income streams are really good. We do obviously the fundraising, tin collections, you can do a one-off event. You can be charity of the year. There's lots of different ways to support the Help Appeal. And, you know, people often ask me, Jane, well, you know, I live in the Midlands. You've built a helipad down in London or Isle of Wight. But we aren't just where we live. As people, we travel. You know, we've done the staycation this year, so we could be in Cornwall, we could be in London for the weekend, we could be anywhere where any of our helipads are, and we wouldn't mind being, you know, if we were going to be, our lives were going to be saved, we want the best service and we want the quickest way to get to hospital. So the importance of helipads are so important. So important to me, as you know, as everybody else.
Now, I like, again, the assumptions that they're already there. I was surprised, and you know, 51 million in planned you know, works for additional helipads and all of that that's going on, you know, anything we can do to help contribute towards that and raise money. I think the raffle's a absolutely fantastic idea. And those are findable on the website. You know, have a look. It's all there. There's a lottery tab there as well. So for anyone listening, please check it out.
There's also a donation button. If you don't necessarily want to join any lottery or anything, there's a donation button that you can. We're on sort of Facebook, the Help Appeals on Facebook, on LinkedIn, Twitter. It's on all the platforms, so we're quite easy to find. But I remember thinking back before I knew about the charity that, like you, why isn't it government funded? And I just didn't realise, but the air ambulance and what we do, I'd say we're like the fourth emergency service that everybody thinks that they should be there, but one day, who knows, you might need them. And I think that's the point to get across as well, that, you know, we are here to help to save lives.
Yeah. And I think it was important, something you mentioned earlier, you know, with the paramedic and in your story, what they give, and they know the importance of a 40-minute, you know, ambulance ride or a 6-minute helicopter flight.
Yeah.
They know that, and it's important to them. And it's, you know, there's so many different ways this impacts people, you know, doctors, paramedics, families, you know, the communities, you know, all of that. So again, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, what the Help Appeal is doing, the strength that you show, and what you give personally is phenomenal. So thank you. Thank you from all of us, actually.
Thank you.
For the folks that are listening that haven't had a chance to meet you yet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Leslie, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. You know, I think we've all had a good learning experience through this interview. So thank you very much. And hopefully we will see you soon.
Thank you very much, Shane. And thank you for your listeners for taking the time to listen to me as well.
No, our pleasure.
Thank you. Okay.